I'd like to thank Roger and everyone for the opportunity to come here in Seoul. It's a fantastic idea, and I really hope it works and you can come back next year to drink more beer, if you wouldn't mind, because that's the main thing. Anyway, I'm not a professional, and I do need notes, so forgive me my sins. Anyway, from my limited knowledge of the seven star, arises from interest in brewing in Bristol. I was lucky enough to take part in a course at Bristol's record office at the time when Scottish in Newcastle were closing the Courage Bristol Brewery down. This wasn't production reasons or anything like this. It was due entirely to the rising land prices in central Bristol. Anyway, being suspicious of the given date of the brewery is 1702, I had the opportunity to work in the excellent facilities at the record office and discovered that the brewery had been continuously in production right back to 1567, longer even than Young's. And I'm sure if people knew that, there would have been more of an outcry when they decided to close the brewery down. Anyway, the exercise brought to light the tremendous contribution brewing had brought to Bristol, which was really quite extraordinary and pretty much overlooked. From the Knights Templar in the 11th century through to the Witches of Bristol in the 14th century, and on up to modern times, brewing in Redcliffe and Temple had been a major industry. It was tragic that Scottish Courage decided to take the money and run. Many calls were made to try and keep the memory fresh via a museum on the site, and at the very least a microbrewery to reflect its traditions and everything. And the planners did manage to get out of the developers the promise of a microbrewery. I just hope they keep their promise. Anyway, many of Bristol's civic characters gave brewing as their trade, and some of them were involved in Bristol's radical past. For example, the Yeamans family, who actually owned the Courage Brewery, or part of the site on which the Courage Brewery is now, ran the brewery in the early 17th century. And not only were they involved with brewing, they were involved with the early colonial expansion into the West Indies, and they also were involved in a royalist plot in the Civil War. They were two of them, Yeamans and a colleague called Boucher, tried to get the royalists into Bristol to avoid a big scrap with the parliamentarians who held the city. Unfortunately, it was all a bit farcical, and they had passwords like Charles and things like that, and they soon got discovered. And Yeamans and his co-conspirators were apprehended in farcical circumstances, as I said, trying to escape through the mud of the River Frome. Their treatment though, was quite harsh, and they were hung, drawn and quartered, I believe. This had a tragic effect on the people of Bristol, because when the royalists did eventually take it, the ordinary people were treated quite badly by them. Anyway, after the Yeamans gave up their tenure of the brewery, the Saunders family, who were also soap boilers, which is a trade very similar to brewing, boiling water and all that malarkey, they bought the brewery from the Yeamans, and they ran it for three generations until selling it to John Hawkins. And John Hawkins is a chap who's very important to Bristol's literary history, well, Britain's literary history, through his sponsorship of various schemes. Anyway, not only did it come into the literary side of it, it also comes into the history of the Seven Stars, because as far as I know, it's the first known reference of the Seven Stars as existing. That's bad English. But the purchase document is actually in the record office, and it clearly states that the Seven Stars in St. Thomas Lane is part of the brewery estate, and therefore must be one of the earliest tied houses in the country. It belonged to the Saunderses, and they sold it to John Hawkins. All this was in 1697, and the given date for the pub is 1770, I think, and this obviously predates it by some way. Anyway, this also predates the year that the brewery gave us, the Courage Brewery gave us the date of the Courage Bristol Brewery as 1702. In fact, Sir John Hawkins bought it 5 years before then. Anyway, 1702 was the year in which... Please pardon me. Sean Hawkins, then Lord Mayor, received Queen Anne on her first visit here. As well as supporting the royal party with beer, he also got his knighthood. Nowadays you have to pay for a school academy for that sort of thing. Anyway, he supplied her with beer. Anyway, to this day, there is a Sir John Hawkins Lane at the still-to-be-redeveloped part of the brewery. Another claim Hawkins has on our history is that he was one of the corporation's backers of Woods Rogers' famous privateering voyage around the world. Not only did this make him wealthy, but also indirectly he influenced English literature. Thanks to this epic voyage, are many of you aware of Woods Rogers' voyage around the world? Some of you might be. Anyway, a brief synopsis. He left Bristol with a buccaneer as his pilot, Dr. Thomas Dover as his surgeon and second captain, and they went around the world taking Spanish possessions left, right, and Chelsea, and he discovered Alexander Selkirk on a remote island off of the Peruvian coast, Juan Fernandez Island, rescued Selkirk. They then took a Spanish treasure ship, only the one of three English people to take a Spanish treasure ship. They then crossed the Pacific, which was quite an arduous thing. They then, after many trials and tribulations, eventually came home, only to be accused of trading in arrack, which was a spirit, by the English East India Company, and they got into all sorts of trouble. Anyway, the adventures that the crew went on, one of the crew got lost, and his adventures eventually became the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Selkirk was discovered. His story was then turned into Robinson Crusoe. Dampier's stories and maps and all that became Gulliver's Travels. And then right up to Treasure Island, all these influences, we believe, were influential on Robert Louis Stevenson setting his tale here in Bristol. Anyway, that was all from one little epic voyage from 1708 to 1711. Anyway, throughout the 18th century, mirroring Bristol's population rise, the brewery grew and grew, and becoming the, I beg your pardon, it was rebuilt in the 1730s to become the Bristol Porter Brewery, and this was a big achievement in brewing history terms because it quickly followed a trend that had been set in London. Anyway, it was very, very popular, and it ultimately led on to George's taking over the brewery. Anyway, one of Hawkins' successors was Isaac Cobhouse. He was the chap who actually built the Porter Brewery, and as Matt is nodding there, he was quite significant in the history of slavery in Bristol. He was in this book, which A Draft of Contentment, from which was published to celebrate the Courage Brewery family. He's termed one of Bristol's most famous slave traders. I think infamous would perhaps be more appropriate. Anyway, Bristol Brewed Porters went out on Isaac Hobhouse's ships and were exported to the African coast and then on to the West Indies, and Bristol-made bottles went off as well, filled with porter rather than in barrels, so as these could then be used for rum in the colonies. Anyway, with the purchase of the brewery by Philip George, this is after Hobhouse's reign, there's an interesting debate by the directors concerning the slave trade, and I'll quote this from A Draft of Contentment. The issue was never clear-cut, especially not in Bristol, and hopefully this will give a bit of an insight into the sort of the two sides of the story. The partners, this is in the Philip George's brewery, the partners were mostly eminent Bristol merchants. Some were in the slave trade, then a dominant feature of commercial life in the city. Indeed, two of the partners were all involved in a public controversy on the traffic, as it was called, on opposite sides. Mr. Peter Lunnell was secretary of the first provincial committee set up to encourage legislation abolishing the slave trade, and Mr. Samuel Spann was a member of the Committee of Well-to-Do Local Merchants defending a traffic on which the welfare of the West India Islands and the commerce and revenue of the kingdom so essentially depend. So you can see that throughout it's been a really hot topic. And then back to my terrible notes. Going back to the seven stars, which also sort of around the day that Philip George took the brewery, was when Wilberforce sent one of his spies, Clarkson, to the Seven Stars to investigate what was actually going on the ground in the slave trade. And here we go, I get lost again now, from the landlord. Going back to the Seven Stars, Wilberforce's spy, Clarkson, had tremendous help from the landlord, which enabled him to form a picture of what exactly was going on. Had not Clarkson discovered Landlord Thompson, history could have been changed. Marsh Street was then the corn street of its day, and several unscrupulous people there used to engage sailors for the Guinea trade. As Clarkson had been warned off from investigations there, he spoke glowingly of the help Thompson gave him. And I will give you a little bit of the background of the Seven Stars from a brilliant book by a lady called Helena Eason, who is no longer with us, I'm afraid, but she did this in her book Bristol's Historic Inns. And this is in the chapter entitled The Seven Stars. She says, "This inn lies in the shadows in Thomas Church, tucked away in Thomas Lane. It is probably a late 18th century purpose-built inn and is typical of many small town inns. The original hostelry would have possessed an extensive yard, but today there is only a narrow cobbled passageway. The approach is still of some interest, however, as the pavement preserves the iron-bound edges to prevent damage by iron cartwheels, which are unique to Bristol. There is also a nice old lamppost to set the scene for this listed building. There has been little change externally in this inn since its erection, apart from the introduction of some sash windows at the side. But this unpretentious dockside inn has played an important part in our country's history. It was in the Seven Stars that the Reverend Thomas Clarkson met Landlord Thompson in 1787, and began to collect the evidence which enabled his friend, William Wilberforce, to carry out the act for the abolition of slavery. Clarkson wrote in his journal, "I was determined to inquire into the truth of the reports that seamen had an aversion to enter, and that they were inveigled, if not often forced, into this hateful employment. For this purpose, I was introduced to a landlord by the name of Thompson, who kept a public house named Seven Stars. He was a very intelligent man, well accustomed to receive sailors when discharged at the end of their voyages, and to board them till their vessels went out again, or to find them berths in others. Clarkson blackened his face like a miner and listened to the stories told by these sailors of the atrocities committed in the slave trade. He was successful and gave all the credit to his landlord friend. I perceived in a little time the advantage of having cultivated an acquaintance with Thompson of the Seven Stars, for nothing could now pass in Bristol relative to the seamen employed in this trade, but it was soon brought to me." Now back to my nonsensical notes. I think Matt would bear this out. It was the treatment of the sailors which really started the anti-slavery movement, and that was an essential sort of thing to stir the British public into abolishing the trade. Anyway, for a little bit of background information into the Temple and Redcliffe area, it's always been an integral part of Bristol's history. Firstly, with the Knights Templar brewing and so on, the wool trade, which was quite an essential trade, this is throughout the Middle Ages, soap making, brewing, distilling, sugar refining and tobacco once the West Indies comes into the picture, glass and pottery, inns large and small, huge stabling, some with common names, some with funny ones. Two of the inns that I really like the name of in the Redcliffe area were the Yellow Anchor and the Crab's Well Inn. And if you can compare them with a favourite pirate haunt of about that time, the Farting Rat, that was unfortunately we never had one of those, but anyway, the area has been devastated since its 18th century heyday. Changing industries, new roads, Victorian planners, the Blitz, and post-war planners. And through it all, the Seven Stars have survived. And now, with the bicentenary of abolition, perhaps it's the most important building left to bear witness to one of humankind's worst episodes. I'm trying to persuade Bristol and District Camera to evoke one of their historic inns plaques, because I think the Seven Spires are world importance, and if we could make far more of it, I think it would be a great asset for the city. Anyway, thank you for being patient with me. That's a bit disjointed and what have you, but I know you're not really important.
Thank you very much.